Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Cereal from the Box.
I'm Marie.
And I'm Gianna. And this is the show where we answer all your burning questions. We defy the norms and we stay hydrated.
Oh, are you hydrated today? I am not all
No,
hydrated today.
I'm not. But it is a goal.
It's a goal, yes. Yeah, so do you have any fun things that you want to share before we get started? 'Cause I don't.
Oh, yeah, I don't have anything to share, but I do have a question
Yeah.
for everybody out there. I already asked Marie, but if you have mask acne, help me, okay? Because I have had like good skin most of my life, and like even in the first 2 years of the pandemic, my skin was like not that bad. And just like now, I don't know what it is, but it's like really, I mean, I think I do know what it is. Like my school is requiring double masks.
Oh,
And I just
yeah.
like don't know what to do because it's really annoying me. So yeah, if
Yeah.
you have any advice, please give it to me.
I just choose to suffer. I'm just like, it is what it is. I can't do anything. Well, I've had to really like stop picking at my face. So
Yeah.
that's like really my only goal. If I can avoid doing that, then I don't care if I have to deal with a couple spots for a couple days.
Well, like that's the thing is like I really try not to pick up my face also. But like it just for me is like painful. You know what I mean? It's not
Oh,
just
yeah,
like
is it like
it's like
cystic?
annoying. It just like hurts because I have stuff over it. So
Do you ever use the hydrocolloid bandages?
I do. I do. I like wear them literally not even just at night, like in the daytime also, because no one can see them. It doesn't matter. And not that I care about anyone's opinion of me, but it
Yeah,
doesn't
I
really
do the
matter.
same.
Okay. Well, everybody,
Let's
let's
jump
hop
into it.
right in. Yeah.
Yeah,
Okay.
we have taken to the Reddit in order to find some cool things. Cool. Well, I don't know if they're cool. It's serious stuff, but some topics to talk about today. So I am on the Fuck Eating Disorders Reddit because that's what we're about.
Yeah, baby.
I figured I've never really been on Reddit, and I figured it's probably much like Tumblr and every other social media. Like, if you go deep enough, you're gonna find triggering pro-Anna content, and I don't want to deal with that. So I
Yeah.
felt the fuck eating disorders Reddit
Only
be
used Reddit
helpful.
like one time. It's because I had a question about these point shoes that I got that it's like they're like a really niche, it's a really niche thing. And I thought someone would be able to answer my question. So I like
Did
made a freaking account. No, they were terrible. I was like, hey, like these like are a little tight and I know it says on their website they don't stretch, but like does anybody have any like low-key
experience?
advice? And then this person's like, no, they actually don't. You should return them. I was like, girl, the reason I'm asking is that I cannot return them.
Ah, no.
But I just like spilled a whole cup of coffee on them by accident and it helped a little bit.
Nice. I was about to say, liquid could be helpful, maybe.
But the thing is, they're made of plastic, so I think what I need to do
Oh.
is I really don't like them. Fuck you, Gainer Minden. They just feel weird, like weird on my feet. So what I'm gonna do, I think, is take a hair dryer and just hair dry them while I'm wearing them, so
Like
they kind of
boots.
mold my foot a little bit. Anyway,
Okay,
that's that.
cool. Well, let's jump into it. Also unrelated, I just wanted to say my favorite little like TikToks to watch are the what people that read the "Am I the asshole?" like questions. So I feel like we're kind of entering that territory. Obviously,
Down with
except for it's
Tumblr, up
eating
with
disorder
Reddit.
related. Okay, let's get started. So someone wanted to kind of just start an overall discussion about like having anorexia and then that turning into binge eating disorder. So is it really binge eating disorder or is it just unrecognized extreme hunger? So they said, this is a reference to the occasional posts on here and more commonly on the other subreddit, people with restrictive eating disorders claiming that in attempting recovery, they have fallen into binge eating disorder. Now, I wonder how many of these people have genuinely developed BED and whether the majority haven't actually just come across extreme hunger for the first time and don't know about it or refuse to acknowledge it. As a result, they naturally feel out of control, giving them the impression that they've developed BED. Extreme hunger, according to majority experience, apparently tapers out at some point, provided that you see it through and don't restrict. But those who freak out about the onset of their ravenous hunger do exactly that and fall into the trap of restricting in order to get it back under control. And obviously restriction leads to worse extreme hunger or a prolongation of the extreme hunger phase, thus easily allowing the whole mess to be mistaken for BED. What are your thoughts? I would love to have a more in-depth discussion about this. There are some genuine cases of a person with anorexia with the restrictive subtype falling into BED, and they reference somebody who I don't know. But somehow I feel that those cases are in the absolute minority. Do you have any thoughts on that, G?
Well, I do think that, especially when you're not in like a institutionalized recovery, it's probably so common that this would happen to somebody.
Right.
Because you don't have anyone guiding you towards like, this is normal. And like, there's no one like moderating your refeeding or whatever they call
it.
Because like, I honestly thought I had BED, but I definitely did not.
Yeah.
It was just a part of the binge restrict cycle that I was going in and out of in my messy, my messy recovery journey.
Yeah, like the early stages especially, right?
Not even. It like lasted like a year. I don't know if that stays early. It's not like just like when I was like kind of given like an ultimatum by my friends about it. It was like through like my whole like self-discovery journey or whatever. I feel like maybe like a lot of people are not falling into binge eating disorder. They're just afraid to let themselves recover, and their body just is craving food.
Yeah, and I think it's an interesting point that you brought up, the like being in a higher level of care or having some kind of formalized support versus recovering on your own. Because I will say, and I don't know if this is related to that or just like my experience, but when I was in treatment, I didn't deal with extreme hunger, not like initially. And it really wasn't until later down the line when I was like still struggling with the different eating disorder behaviors that the binge eating / extreme hunger kind of came into play. And then obviously I dealt with binging for like many years after that. So I think that is interesting. And I don't know if it's just like the consistency of the meals and having like a set meal plan that's supposed to meet your nutritional needs. And this, especially like in treatment, it's like a very gradual way in terms of like increasing your intake and things like that. And it's being monitored a lot. But also, I think at the same time, I'm sure there are plenty of people that are in treatment that do experience extreme hunger. And I don't know how eating disorder treatment centers like actually address that. But I do think that is definitely like something that people go through. But I feel like the most common instances where I've heard about people talking about their extreme hunger is people that are recovering either in an outpatient setting or just like independently.
Yeah. I feel like definitely I would love to know more about people experiencing extreme hunger in a treatment center.
Yeah, because I feel like the message that we always got was like, your meal plan is the minimum. Like, you can have more than that. But like, if say you're like inpatient or residential, where everything's so closely monitored, like no one ever voluntarily had extra. Do you know what I mean? Or like had more food or had free access to food. It was very much like, here are the set times for snacks, supplements, meals, whatever it was. And maybe just because of how it was structured, like that wasn't an issue for people, but I feel like it has to be, you know what I mean? Like that's just such a natural response to prolonged restriction.
And there are people that do go to treatment for binge eating disorder.
Yeah.
So like, I'm really curious because I think on More Than Tracy Turnblad, again, great podcast, I think one of her guests was talking about their experience with binge eating disorder in a treatment center. And how it was the same place as the people with restrictive eating disorders.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. And like that is so frustrating because I think I knew while I was at treatment, I knew only one person with a binge eating disorder diagnosis. Mm-hmm. Everyone else had a restrictive eating disorder. And in like group therapies and stuff like that, you would only, or most of the time people would only talk about the restrictive sides of their eating disorders. Like very rarely would they ever talk about binging as a symptom. Or even purging or anything like that. Like that was the restriction was just like the most common one that was always focused on. And I had a girl say to me one time, cause I brought up binging at one point, and she was like, wow, like, thank you so much for bringing that up because we never get to talk about it. And it's like, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Because it's the, especially higher levels of care are overly dominated by people with restrictive eating disorders, probably because of those are, you know, seen collectively as the worst kinds, even though that's not true and such total bullshit, you know?
Yeah. I just feel like also maybe sometimes like the effects of restricting eating disorders can be more immediately damaging to someone's health versus like binge eating or purging can like be dangerous over a longer period of time and more maybe emotionally damaging.
Well, and that's the thing too, is that, I mean, I know like myself, I invalidated my binge eating experience a lot by trying to say to myself, like, this is not impacting my health in the same way that like a restrictive eating disorder was, but maybe I shouldn't, I don't want to be like triggering or upsetting, but like, I know people who their, you know, like purging impacted them in a very immediate, very dangerous way. You
know, so it's just like it all. I think that's important to point out.
Well, I censored myself a little bit on that, but to emphasize that point, yeah, it for sure impacted their health, and that's what's scary is because you don't know when the exact point is that becomes really bad. It's like, you know, maybe there's things over time that get worse, and maybe for some people like their medical issues aren't even like a huge deal. Like I know for me, like I think there was like a couple medical things that probably weren't great, but overall for the most part, like I was fine, luckily. You know what I mean? That's definitely like a luckily. But you never know when one behavior is gonna kind of be the last straw for your body. You know what I mean? And that's what's scary about it. And I think it can be really easy to like to dismiss all like the physical harm that eating disorders do to your body when it's like, well, I've been fine so far. It's like, well, you might not be in 2 seconds, you know?
Yeah. But like kind of like going back to this person's question, I feel like because maybe there's not as much education about it, or as people that have been restrictive are in such, they don't have context for eating. Their extreme hunger, I think, could be easily mistaken in their mind for binge eating disorder, where clinically it wouldn't be.
I think another way, I think we always try to differentiate extreme hunger from binge eating by like thinking about the idea that like restriction leads to binging. And then we try to follow that narrative and try to suss it out. And I feel like that's really difficult. And I feel like maybe an easier way to distinguish binge eating disorder from extreme hunger is like what other triggers are leading to a binge.
Right.
Like, is there an emotional component to your binges? is there a routine component to your binges? Like, I think for me, that's where I felt that there was a tipping point between, like, I'm in recovery and I'm just really hungry and I'm just trying to satiate myself and I can't feel full and I feel out of control in that process, to, you know, I'm actively using food because of how I'm feeling about myself, to either make myself feel better, to punish myself, whatever it is, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? And also, I mean, I think sometimes people try to differentiate it based on, like, the kinds of foods that you're binging on. And I think that could be, like, a little bit difficult to try to do that. But, like, you know, when you're in the extreme hunger phase, you're going to gravitate towards certain, like, nutrient-dense foods so you can get all those nutrients that your body has been lacking.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, with binge eating, I do think, like, it can be a little bit more variable in terms of, like, what foods are triggering your binges and
right.
what foods you end up binging on.
Yep. All right.
Cool. We cool. have thoroughly discussed.
Question number one. Check.
Check. Cool. Let's go on to this other one. Okay. The next one is, are there any other mental illnesses where people are so proud of their disease? This person says, I was on an eating disorder support group yesterday, and it made me realize again how much people with an eating disorder want to be the most disordered person in the room. Like, I always feel like clinging to our EDs. And even now that I'm in recovery, I'm proud of the weight loss, the disorder, the restriction, everything. It's fucked. Why is that? It just makes the whole recovery process harder and the mutual support more complicated. Are there any other mental illnesses where people act like this?
I really don't know.
I think this is me speaking from my psychology background and my MSW and not from personal experience, because I think it's really interesting and a very, I think for the most part, unique component of how competitive eating disorders are. And like how much comparison there is and how much there needs to be validation in terms of being sick. And I think that's like something that you can kind of see across the board, especially for restrictive eating disorders. Maybe not necessarily so much for other eating disorders, but I do think that this kind of shows up in other ways with other mental illnesses. And I think that maybe more so ties to how you're coping with the idea of having like a mental illness or coping with your own mental illness, right? So I would think, I guess, like, to kind of give an example, and I don't think this is in like the same way, but like with like the ADHD community, right? Like, I feel like I think being neurodivergent, like, you can kind of uplift that as like a positive thing. And I don't think that's in the same way of like eating disorders being competitive and wanting to be sicker. Like, I don't think it's like, here's my ADHD contest. Like, I want to be debilitated by my ADHD. Like, I don't think anyone wants that. But I do think that, like, there is a reaction to having certain mental illnesses where you seek solidarity amongst, like, other people who also
are dealing with that. Yeah, and I feel like the difference there, I think the difference could also be, like, something like ADHD or OCD is something that you have for life, I feel, and it's something like you can continue to, like, it's not going to cause you physical damage for the most part. Like, it can make your life more difficult, but I feel like it's something that can be treated with medication and, like,
I think it depends, because with OCD in particular, like, the severity of it can really differentiate between people. But I do think you're right. Like, when something, I mean, most mental illnesses can be lifelong things that you're struggling with. Other times it can be episodic.
Eating disorders are like things that stay with you for your whole life.
Right.
But I feel like you can recover from them for the most part. And like, even though it's still a part of you. Like, you can go on with your life and, like, have that have been a part of your life that is no longer threatening to your everyday.
Right. And I think what you're getting at is probably, like, articulating what I was trying to say, too, is that when your identity becomes wrapped up in your mental illness, I think that's when you kind of see more of that behavior. Either one, just identifying with, like, your mental illness, having that be a part of, I don't want to say personality, maybe your persona, your personhood, how you go through life, you know? And again, nothing wrong with that, but I think when you're, like, in the depths of your eating disorder, having that be your sole personality, your sole person, like, that's who you are, that's where all, like, the competitiveness and the need for validation to prove that you're sick comes through. And I think maybe similarly, like, disorders that are based in trauma, like, the need to have your trauma validated. I think maybe sometimes, and I don't want to make an overgeneralization with this, I do think that sometimes, depending on, like, what you're struggling with for other mental illnesses, I think there's plenty of people who, in order to get validation for the struggles that they experience, want to be like, well, here's the craziest thing that my mental illness made me do, kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or it kind of becomes like the trauma Olympics of, well, I've had this much trauma and you haven't had that much trauma, so, like, obviously I have it worse off, kind of thing. And I think especially when you're dealing with things, like you were saying, that are lifelong or have been impacting you since childhood or something like that, when the behaviors that you develop in response to the trauma that you experience or because your mental illness becomes so wrapped up in how you interact with the world, I think it can be really hard to let go of that and the need to be sick so that you can be validated and be taken care of, I think is prominent. And I think that does happen with, like, disorders outside of an eating disorder.
Yeah.
So I guess conclusion is, I think there's commonalities. I think it shows up in different ways, but I do think that, like, the overall pervasiveness of how competitive eating disorders are is slightly unique to eating disorders.
Yeah. And I guess that's the answer to that person's question. It's just like, maybe not, but that's just part of the disease.
Yeah. I think so. And again, I do think that, like, it's important to recognize that that's probably more of a component that you see with restrictive eating disorders compared to, like, ARFID, for example, or eating disorders where, like, more shame is involved. Like, because there's, like, people that, like, struggle with, like, bulimia or binge eating and don't want to share that they struggle with those things. Like, they don't want to necessarily. It depends, you know.
I feel like restriction is so rewarded in our society that it almost is, like, a good thing to some people. Like, it could be virtuous. Does that make sense?
Yes. I agree. 100%.
Cool.
Cool. Question two. Check.
Check.
Hold on. I just exited out.
I can read the next one.
You have it up.
How do I know that all in is the right thing to do? The numbers and weight, but we won't be reading the numbers and weight.
Thank you.
I'm so sorry to post for the third time today, but I really need some support. I just feel so conflicted about staying all in. I've seen people saying that it works and others saying that it doesn't, and I just don't know what to do. Or I just don't know who to believe. I made that second word up. Blah, 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 to the point where I'm blank, around blank pounds, different than my pre-ED weight. I know I'm growing and overshoot come into play, but I'm still body changing. Does anybody have any studies that prove all-in works or personal experience? Sorry to ask, I'm just having trouble finding any. Also, are there any concerns that all-in might mess up my hunger and fullness cues? Okay.
Yeah. Poor, so basically, this person,
send our love to you. Okay.
Yeah. So basically, it sounds like they're struggling with the idea of like weight gain as it relates to all in recovery, right? And to me, one of the things that I don't like about how people talk about all in is that there is so much focus and emphasis on this idea of like your overshoot weight, and then the expectation is that you're going to go over this your set point weight, like where your body naturally wants to be. You'll go over that, but eventually it will settle back down to where your set point is. And mm-hmm. I really, really hate that narrative. And I think that's what this person is struggling with, is it can be really hard, no matter what, you know, how you're approaching to recovery. If a part of your recovery journey is to gain weight, it can be really difficult to know that the weight gain isn't going to continue on forever, kind of thing. Like, it's very like a black and white. It feels like it's going to last forever, and like, you know, all your worst fears are kind of coming true and things like that. And what I have seen so often is that all in is kind of used as a way to be like give reassurance for actually, no, like, it's fine. It's like, I feel like I see this like Instagram posts like so often about people like eating disorder specialists or whatever being like, oh, I won't let you get fat. And it's like, that is the most fat phobic thing that you could say, and like not helpful thing that you could say to someone struggling with an eating disorder. Cause like, honestly, that's not the point, you know, like you need to be where your body wants you to be at. And also, people with eating disorders are not a monolith of people that are malnourished and underweight. You know what I mean? So I just don't like the idea of like, we need to provide, like, it's a process and it's difficult to gain weight, but there's other ways to go about coming to terms with that and accepting that and being at peace with your body than just reassuring yourself that you're not going to quote unquote gain too much weight, you know, or that you'll be able to be in recovery, but be able to stay thin or whatever it is. And I just feel like all in really promotes that kind of narrative because it's so focused on this idea of like overshoot weight. So it's like, yeah, it's okay to gain weight for now because you'll eventually lose some of it later. And I just don't think that's helpful.
Well, I feel like, rather than focusing on that part of it, and like, I don't know if this is at all helpful to this person, or they're never going to hear this, but to people that might be feeling similarly in uncomfortable with or doubtful of like going all in to recovery versus just like being less disordered than before as like their other option, is that maybe thinking about it not so much as, oh, overshoot weight and then go back down to where my body should be, is thinking, yeah, at the beginning, I'm going to be eating a lot more because I'm re-nourishing myself and I'm like teaching myself that it's okay to eat. And then your body, instead of thinking of it as like, oh, my body will just lose the weight, or my body will change back to how it was supposed to be, that you will learn about yourself. And this kind of answers this person's other question about their hunger and fullness cues. At some point, you'll stop being so excited that you can eat ice cream every day or whatever like fitness people claim happens. Is you're stop being so enamored at the concept of you can eat what you want when you want to, because that's just how people are. That's just how your body is meant to do. Is your body will tell you when it wants something and you can have it, and it's not the last time you're ever going to have it. And it's, you, since you have permission to eat things whenever you want, you're not going to be so, I feel like, gung-ho about it, and it will just be normal life to you, and you will eventually learn to eat what you need, and you won't be as emotional about going under or beyond that.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think the ultimate key to reestablishing your hunger and fullness cues is to be eating consistently and to be eating enough, you know? And so I think it's like a good approach is to give yourself that unconditional permission to eat. And really what you're starting to teach yourself intuitive eating principles by giving yourself that permission. Like you're fucking diet culture, you know what I mean? By being like, no, I can have whatever I want. It doesn't matter. I'm not going to live by these rules anymore. When you're consistently honoring your hunger, that's super important and super helpful. And I think like it's a good way to start getting into the intuitive eating mindset. And once, like you were saying, you start habitualizing to different foods or your body's not in a state of being super malnourished, then your body's able to start regulating its hormones and all those biological things that are going on that's telling you if you're hungry or full. And you can start getting into the practice of being in tune with that in ways that you maybe weren't necessarily at the beginning when you were just responding to whenever you were hungry.
Yeah.
So I think at the end of the day, like, it's a helpful approach. And I think, like, more of the reason that people should consider going all in is, like, it's such a big step towards freedom. You know what I mean? Like, being able right. to be like, yeah, fuck the eating disorder, and I'm just gonna do this. And I feel like it can be like a really, I mean, it might be scary dealing with all the other body image things and that are coming yeah. up, but it's a really like freeing experience and joyful experience to be able to have all these foods that you, you know, have right. told yourself maybe that you can't have, and to actually, I mean, fullness can be really scary, but also like come as a bit of a relief to finally be able to feel full. You know,
mm-hmm. I think also like, I don't know how old this person is or like how long they've been like struggling with like their eating disorder. Mm-hmm. But for me, what happened is at the point where I kind of started to go quote, like all in is also like, I basically went through puberty also. Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. I had my like quote puberty when I was like 13 or whatever. But right. I feel like my body didn't really start going through the normal changes until I was like 20 and I was really like recovering.
Right.
So, you know, just like you get a little, like you gain a bit of weight when you go through puberty because your body is growing new bits and doing things.
Yeah.
That could also be part of what's happening for this person, and like I think they just need to take a deep breath and like trust that their body knows what it's doing.
Yeah, and I think that's what's hard too, is it's like, okay, well, I'm gonna reach my set point, I'll overshoot a little bit or whatever, and then I'll come back down to my set point. But it's like, how many of us actually know what our set point's supposed to be? You know what I mean?
Nobody.
Like,
you don't know. Nobody
you
knows.
You don't know. And like when you've struggled with an eating disorder since you were an adolescent, you know what I mean? Also adolescent, or, you know, like it can be really difficult to even yeah. know, like I did this when I was like in recovery. I was like, oh, well, so my weight should be the weight that I was at in high school. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, no, it shouldn't. I mean, in an ideal world, I guess, but like, that's not actually, you know, how it works or what ended up happening.
Yeah.
You know, and it can be an easy trap to be like, well, before my eating disorder started, that would be the weight that I'm supposed to be. It's like, well, no, not necessarily. Because as you age, as you go through your puberties, mm-hmm. you know, things change in terms of like where your body's supposed to be. And so I think the idea of trying to micromanage of like, this is my set point. And also, mind you, a set point is a range, and a pretty wide range at that, you know. Mm-hmm. So to have like a specific number in mind, I don't think is any more helpful than having like a specific number that you want to be, you know, your lowest weight or something like that, you know. Mm-hmm. So I mean, I would suggest overall, if you're gonna go all in, I do think like it's important to have at the very least, like if you can, if it's accessible to you, a therapist involved, because mm-hmm. then you have a support system to help with, you know, these kinds of thoughts, the like the fears around weight gain and things like that, helping with all those other things while you're still, you know, working on the nourishment side by yourself.
Yeah. So I'm gonna change locations quickly because of the radiator.
Oh yeah, no worries. It's intermission time. Do 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 do. If we were paid. there would be an ad here, but there's not.
Do you want to read the next question?
Yes, I can. Okay. So, this one is about exercise. It says, I can't tell if I'm falling back into my old exercise habits or not. So recently I've been exercising more because I want to do it and feel physically ready. However, I have mixed feelings about it. I simultaneously feel like I want to do it and like I should, and I find it hard to differentiate between the two. The feelings of compulsion come from a mixture of feeling like I have to exercise a certain amount in order to be healthy, and also feeling like I should do certain chores in order to help my family, like walking the dog, walking down to the shops, etc. What do you think I should do? I want to exercise out of enjoyment, and most of the time I feel like I am, but I don't want to make it disorder as I can't differentiate between wanting and feeling like I should. I think this is a great question because I've also...
This is a wonderful question.
Yeah, struggle with that. Do you want to share your thoughts first?
Okay, so I think that definitely the one that's to do chores to help your family, don't put that together with your exercising. Mm-hmm. You have a dog. This is like my thoughts about people with dogs. Walk your dog. Hey, that's not for you. That's for your dog. So don't think about that being for you. If no one is walking your dog, please walk your dog. Don't let your eating disorder become a part of walking your dog, okay?
I love you. This is so great to me. I've never seen you so passionate about dogs.
You know what the thing is? So side note for everybody, my boyfriend's mom runs the JSPCA in Jerusalem. And like, she is so mean to people on the phone all day, not because she's mean. She's not mean. She's so loving to animals that she spends her whole day yelling at people that want to return their dogs.
Oh my
God.
So
if you have a dog, take care of your dog. Do not mix up your poor dog going on a walk to your eating disorder.
Yeah.
That being said, all right, your feelings of compulsion come from a mixture of exercise a certain amount to be healthy and feeling like I should do chores. So I'll just give you a personal story about myself. So when I was in undergrad and I was a dance major, I was dancing many hours a day. And we were also encouraged to cross train. So that would be going to the gym, doing cardio for stamina and like doing weights for strength. And I enjoyed it at some point. And then at some point it felt like an obligation that I had to do these things. And then it became an obligation to myself that I was a bad person if I didn't do these things.
Mood. Mm-hmm.
So then when I stopped, I was a lot happier. And it's not that I wasn't doing exercise anymore, but I just didn't want to do it beyond the point that it made me unhappy. You know what I mean? So for this person, for people that are kind of feeling the same way, I feel like exercise to the point where you feel that's enough and don't go beyond that. You know, if you feel like you have to exercise to be healthy, I don't know how to answer that because your movement is important for your physical and mental health. What you have to do for that movement is up to you, and how much of it to do is also up to you.
Yeah.
If you feel like there's a higher being dictating how much you should be doing, that's the point where you should like do some soul searching and like say like, okay, that's enough, or like, oh, I'm still enjoying this, maybe I want to do some more. Like, just not feeling like there's something you have to do. Make it be like an internal motivation of joy, because it should make you feel good, it should make you feel happy. And like, while yeah, like some exercise people will say, and I will agree with, like, oh, like starting is the hardest part, like you just want to stay in your bed, but then once you get going you start to enjoy it, that could be true for people. But while you're going, once you stop enjoying it and once it starts being a physical or emotional like weight,
yeah,
that's maybe the point where you scale back and be like, okay, I was going to do my exercise for 20 minutes and that felt good, but at 21 minutes it started feeling bad. I would stop at 20 minutes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I
I don't know.
definitely agree. I think the part with the like chores are finding movement and certain activities that are like more mundane, if you will. That's difficult because I know like I still kind of have that mindset. I'll be like, okay, I'll shovel the driveway. I did my movement for the day kind of thing. And I think that's hard to break in terms of to think about it differently. But I think what's maybe overall more important is kind of like what you're saying is one, if you're doing movement, you need to be checking in with yourself. You need to check in, one, do I actually like the type of movement that I'm doing? Two, do I actually want to be doing this? Three, do I want to stop? And if you feel like in any way that you want to stop, I think it's really important when you're kind of working on compulsive exercise is to give yourself permission to stop and actually stop. And if that produces some guilt for you, that's fine. That happens to a lot of people. Find ways to kind of sit through that guilt and work through that guilt. Because eventually, over time, that's not going to be, how you respond to that.
Also, like maybe thinking about like why do you want to stop? Like what is making you like want to stop? Like, are you bored? Are you tired?
Oh,
Are
man.
you feeling self-conscious? Are you feeling upset? Are you guilty? Like, why do you want to stop? And like stop and think about it. You know what I mean?
I think another thing is prior to even engaging in any movement, again, ask kind of yourself the same questions. And I would say if you are feeling anxious, so, I'm just creating like a random scenario here. If you had lunch and you're now anxious and you're thinking about, I haven't done any exercise today, maybe I should. I would highly encourage you if you're in that mental state, instead of reinforcing the idea of, I need to compensate for my food, or, I'm feeling anxious and therefore I need to exercise to make that feeling go away, I would encourage you to wait. You can decide later if you still want to exercise, but I think you need to put space between the automatic feeling of like having the urge to exercise and actually ending up exercising in order to work to kind of break that. I think it can be really difficult to be like, especially like with you or what you were talking about earlier is like, for some people, it's just like, I don't really want to go to the gym, but if I do end up going to the gym, then I'll feel good, I'll feel better. I've never experienced that in my life, but I do know that's how people feel about it. And so sometimes it's not just as simple as saying, well, like if you don't want to go, then don't go. Although I would say that, and I do live by that rule. But if you find it difficult to do that, at the very least, put space between you, between when you're feeling the urge to exercise and actually exercising. And
Also,
then,
like the intention, right? Do you feel like the
yes.
intention of why, like if you are doing it out of enjoyment, like this person, but like if you're doing it because like the anxiety or you're thinking like of calories or of how like the shape of your body and like just thinking, why am I doing this? I don't know.
And also, I think, for me anyways, ways that add more joy to whatever movement I'm doing is like if I'm doing it with somebody else, make it more of an activity, I guess, and less of like, here's my checkbox, I need to exercise for the day, check kind of thing. And also, just like another potential aspect that someone could be struggling with, if you feel like you need to exercise or move every single day, then your challenge would be scale that back. Can you go one day without doing any kind of, whatever kind of movement that you deem acceptable? I feel like it's challenging your figuring out, what exactly are kind of your rules or expectations for yourself, and then how can you go about challenging those in kind of small ways? And I think that's gonna what is gonna help you at least differentiate a little bit between when you're being compulsive and when you actually want to do something and when you'll actually enjoy it.
Like, for example, so my goal, I just really wanted to enjoy running. Like, that was always my life dream.
Wow.
I don't know why I, like, always wanted to, like, just, like, enjoy running. Like, I think, like, people that like running, that's, like, so cool that they like it. And, like, I just, like, want to have better stamina. Like, that's just a personal goal. Ever since I got COVID and got asthma, I just want to improve my stamina. So, like, I also read this article that was, like, about couple bonding. And they were, like, couples exercise together. Like, they, like, have a better relationship. So, like, I was, like, okay, like, no one, like, because I don't want to pay for a gym. Like, would I rather do yoga or, like, I don't know, like, some, like, weightlifting, maybe that'll be more fun. But so I was like, let's do running. He's like, okay, have we done it? No. But you know what? I'm so much happier. I just wanted to be good at it.
You know what? I do not blame you for that goal, because my endurance is also really terrible. But I just know for a fact that I hate running. And some days I get the urge and I'm like, I want to just run. Kind of like, you know, like a kid runs.
Yeah.
But that's only going to last like the block. I can't get any further than that. And that's okay.
Run up the block and then just walk home. She's like, I'm done. I've been on some little runs, like for like 5 minutes, like running, and then like just walk a little bit.
Yeah.
I ran around this little path one time that had like a fountain, which is like beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
But just like my lungs can't take it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Curse you, asthma.
Do you have an inhaler?
Yeah.
Okay.
I went to the doctor. Like, I know. Oh, my God. Like, I asked.
No, I know. I know you do. I was just making sure, like, bring your inhaler along if you're going to try to work towards
this goal. I haven't tried to work towards it since last June.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's not, like, a goal that's happening, but I just, you know, to share with people that, maybe you have a goal, but honestly, you're just happier without running, and that's okay.
Yeah. I think last thing I want to say on this topic is, like, it's okay if you don't have it 110% figured out.
Yeah.
Like, I think overall you want to be able to have some kind of differentiation and be able to say no when it's compulsive. Mm-hmm. But I think overall, like, it's muddy. And, like, it takes a long time to, like, unlearn the various, like, beliefs and rules that we might have around exercise. Mm-hmm. So I don't think like the goal is like I'm only gonna exercise for joy, you know what I mean? Like, that'd be great, but I also think like to be more realistic, there might be some times that you exercise when like maybe you didn't really want to do that, and just like being able to recognize that is like a good step so that you have more information in the future to then make, you know, better decisions that are more recovery focused.
Yeah. Or you could even try like doing starting off if you're like new with things that are fun. Like, like a dance party. Like some places like have like dance parties and that's like an exercise. That's like marketed as an exercise, but it's just fun. You know what I mean?
Do you know what I saw? I saw this one exercise class that's like you're hooked up to these like bungee cords.
Yes.
That looks like the funnest thing ever. I think that and like pole dancing would be great activities to try in the future when I'm brave and have money.
I'd be afraid of like getting like metal burn on my thighs.
Yeah, probably.
Or being too slippery because of my sweaty palms. Okay, I mean I would if I like wasn't afraid of like getting metal burn.
Okay,
pole
reconsider in the future.
We'll think about it, maybe I have to get some baby powder.
True. Chalk up like a gymnast. I don't know. Okay.
So for my stripping career, just kidding.
Okay, do we want to do one more?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Last one of the day. So this one asks, is it really possible to learn to eat intuitively after recovery? Does anyone have stories of going from mechanical to intuitive eating? And then their little blurb underneath says, I feel like this 3 meals and 3 snacks a day is just getting drilled into my brain so hard, and eating past fullness is getting so normalized, and I'm terrified I will never be normal. I can't imagine being confident eating when hungry and stopping when full and knowing everything will be normal and okay, and I'll eat enough and to meet my needs. People who have been in recovery long enough to start eating freely slash intuitively, what was it like for you?
You can go first.
Okay. I think I just want to say, like, first off, I have been in this place where I was like, this meal plan is absolutely driving me crazy. I don't feel like it makes sense. Like, I experienced a lot of resistance, especially like later on in my recovery, to this idea of a meal plan, because I felt the exact same way. I was like, there's no way that this is helping my hunger and fullness cues. I feel like I'm overeating, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I think, like, so one, just want to validate that. But two, also just like want to kind of reiterate that depending on where you are in recovery, and it sounds like this person might be earlier on because they are on a meal plan, your hunger and fullness cues are truly like not reliable. And the hard truth is that it takes like a long time. Like, I know when I was actively in treatment on a meal plan, like I was rarely hungry, just because like the food was the meal times and things like that were so consistent. And so it can be really easy to feel like, oh, well, I must be overeating or eating too much or eating past fullness if I'm never getting hungry for my next meal. Or like later on, when I was no longer on treatment, but still with my nutritionist would sometimes recommend different kind of meal plans to me just to make sure I was getting enough. And, you know, I kind of felt similar. And for me, I felt like this idea of eating when I wasn't hungry was going to trigger a binge for me, because that had happened a lot of times where I would not be able to figure out my hunger and fullness and then just end up binging and then feeling guilty about that and feeling like, well, then I must have eaten too much, or it wasn't quite right, or I can't trust myself because I, one, can't figure out if I'm hungry or full or not, and then two, now I'm binging as a result of that. So I think it's really difficult and can feel like you're constantly eating past fullness or whatnot. And it can also feel like, well, you know, my hunger and fullness cues are never going to be normal. Like, I'm never going to be normal. I'm never going to have a normal relationship with food. And honestly, like, that's so difficult because that's like one of the things that's going to prevent you from embracing recovery, because it feels like you can't recover. And when you feel like you can't recover, you're just going to revert back to the eating disorder. And that's really difficult. And it's honestly what kind of counterintuitively keeps you more stuck, is because at the end of the day, when you start going back to eating disorder behaviors, it becomes even harder to then fully commit and pursue to recovery and feel like you can be successful in recovery, and like it fucks with your motivation and things like that. So yeah, just wanted to say that. But then in terms of like moving from that into intuitive eating, is for me, at some point, the meal plan is not, you're not going to, how do I say this? For me, you have to like transition away from the meal plan to like this kind of trial and error towards intuitive eating. So there was a certain point where like a meal plan just wasn't going to work for me, because it either felt too confusing or too restrictive, or it felt like I wasn't really able to practice the intuitive eating around listening to hunger and fullness. And so instead, I basically just had this really long period of this trial and error of trying to figure out exactly what my body was saying. And, you know, as a result, it did lead me to like having to struggle longer. And so I don't know if there's like a way to seamlessly transition from eating the meals and snacks regularly to intuitive eating. Especially when the meals and snacks are determined by like a meal plan. I think though, however, what's important to understand is that the meal plan is, and the eating consistently is what is allowing your body to reestablish the hormones, its biological functions, so it can give you proper signals for hunger and fullness. And then when you start moving towards intuitive eating, once you have that foundation, it's about learning, well, how is hunger showing up for me? What does that feel like in my body? And then conversely, what does the fullness feel like in my body? And I also think like it's important to recognize that like it's okay to eat past fullness, and it's probably going to continue to happen even as like an intuitive eater. Obviously, it's not going to be every single meal that you're eating past fullness, but that can still happen. You can eat to varying levels of fullness. And sometimes it's going to be past what is where you would typically want to stop or what would be comfortable. And I think that's normal and that happens. Adriana's eating a cookie now. How fitting.
Just arrived next to me.
Amazing. Are they homemade or are they store-bought
ones? No.
Anyways.
They're Chips Ahoy.
They are? But they look so chewy. That looks good.
I know. Put them in the microwave.
Brilliant.
You put it in the microwave for 10 seconds.
Chef's kiss. Now you all know.
Well, I never had a meal plan, so.
Yeah, that's true.
Can't really answer that, but.
Best
of luck to you guys.
But do you feel like you had to like have mechanical eating ever in terms of like making yourself eat at when you knew it was like appropriate to, so that you had enough nourishment?
I mean, yeah. I guess could because I saw like my sister's meal plans and stuff, like I knew what was quote like correct. But really for me, a lot of my return to intuitive eating happened more through emulation and like seeing like watching other people eat and balancing that with my preferences.
Yeah.
So like for example, like seeing someone eat like a bowl of pasta that was like really a large bowl of pasta and being like, okay, so like bowl of pasta, got that. But being like, oh, but I don't like peppers in my pasta, so I'll put something else. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like that's kind of how I re-intuitive eated myself.
Yeah. And I think that can also be difficult for some people because you really need to have a good model to base yourself or, you know, base that on, because people who only know other people that diet or restrict, it can be really hard to like figure out what exactly is a normal portion or what is a like complete meal, for instance, in terms of like just how diet culture can like infiltrate basically people's meals and things like that. So if you do have a person who you feel like is a quote unquote normal eater, I feel like it's important, not in terms of like a comparison to make yourself feel bad or trigger yourself in any way, but to just understand like how they're interacting with food and what they, you know, see as like a normal thing to eat. And then it's worth kind of experimenting with yourself and seeing if that's also, you know, something that feels good to you, that satiates your hunger, or, you know, if you need to make tweaks, kind of like you were saying, in order to make it work for you and your preferences. But I also think because intuitive eating is not just eat when you're hungry, stop when you're full, I think it's important maybe to recognize like the value that mechanical eating is providing in terms of the other principles of intuitive eating. So it's like, how is mechanical eating helping you challenge diet culture? How is it, like, in what ways is it teaching you about gentle nutrition? And also, I think, you know, it seems like mechanical eating and intuitive eating are two opposite sides of the coin. But the truth is, like, mechanical eating is also a part of intuitive eating. It's recognizing, okay, you know, I'm not going to have time for breakfast this morning, you know, because of X, Y, and Z factors. I know I won't be hungry when I have the time to eat, but also I need nourishment for the day. So I'm going to have something. Like, that is mechanical eating and still a part of intuitive eating, a part of the gentle nutrition kind of practice. So I think maybe it's important, instead of just focusing on simply hunger and fullness, especially if, you know, you're not quite sure if your hunger and fullness cues are officially like regulated, think about what, you know, how mechanical eating is kind of setting you up for success now, and how really the last piece of your intuitive eating journey then is going to be, you know, being able to trust your body and get in tune with yourself in order to kind of figure out your hunger and fullness so that you can do, you know, establish your meal times and how much you're eating and things like that on your own without the eating disorder voice kind of dictating what's okay and what's not okay.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, hopefully we have adequately answered some of those questions.
And I hope that you can always ask us if you have a question. We're not qualified therapists or experts, but we do our best.
Yes, we do. So if you have anything that you want to share in regards to this episode, or if you have questions that you would like us to answer, you can email us at cerealfromthebox. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What is the name of this podcast? I feel like I just had like a stroke. I was like, that doesn't sound right at all. cerealfromthebox@gmail.com. We also have an Instagram at cerealfromthebox. If you would like to DM us, feel free.
Yeah. You can find me at Gianna Bartolini on Instagram. And you can do an investigative search to look for Marie's. Yep. And that's that.
Wonderful. Well, I hope you all have a lovely and nourishing day today, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.